you are a little bit late, but it's not bad. My first word is to thank the IBL, the whole IBL team for organizing every year this very important seminar, business seminar, this yearly seminar in this such a sunny place, even though today there is not much sun. This morning, in the first session, we have a paper which is given by Rosa Maria Bitetti. She is a PhD candidate in law and economics at the famous University of Louis, Rome. And she is also teaching assistant in political science and public policy analysis. She is a fellow Bruno Leoni and researcher at the Institute of International Affairs. The paper is entitled Economics of Failure in Movies After the Big Crisis. I will introduce afterwards the discussant, Professor Kevin Dahl. Please, Rosa Maria.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks so much to be here this early hour of Sunday morning. I never thought that there was sun this early on Sunday. And we are discussing about movies. So probably the first question that comes to microphone. So probably the first question that comes to your mind is, why are we discussing movies? Why are we discussing movies? There are so many important things. We discussed about pension yesterday. We have, say, banks bailout. Why are we discussing movies? Most of us are economists. Why should we care about it? So, one first question. How many of you had at least Econ 101, introductory economic classes? Raise your hand. But it's actually a very high majority, but guess what? Most people don't do that. They learn economics from somewhere else, and the picture is quite busy, but I will buy drinks or ice cream to whoever recognizes the picture of this scene, or I'll tell you later in the questions. Most people learn as a byproduct of other activities. They resort to art for entertainment, to enjoy, to have fun, but they also learn stuff. They learn stuff about politics, they learn stuff about economics, which is what we are concerned about. And they know that it's hard, it's fun, but it's not true, it's not scientific truth, but it looks like, and it's very vivid. And they learn it through what is called a narrative mode of thought, which is different from a paradigmatic one, which is the one that we use when we study science. We learn facts, we learn definitions, and then we try to put them together with the casual and logical links. Narrative thought goes up with stories and facts that are more resilient in our memories, and facts that can be are not connected and not put in a historical perspective, but they still stick up to our mind and we remind it. So what happened? That when economists say words like profit, rationality, trades, they mean something. Those concepts require specific knowledge, a body of expert knowledge, and not everybody shares. But the thing is, also non-economists use those words. They say people are rational, they are consumers, there is a trade. And what happens in their mind is that they create context for presentation. They filter those concepts through what they already know, without really learning about the stuff. And here I'm not talking about very complicated models like dynamic, stochastic, general equilibrium. I'm talking about very basic concepts of economics, which are counterintuitive. You need to learn economics to really understand it, but still people use them. And they create a complex representation, like a simplified version of what the concept means, and they start using it in their life. And the process of creation of complex representation is inversely proportional to the complexity of the topic, which means to say you have complex representation for simple concept and not for elaborated one. Because when a layman is confronted with a complex concept, okay, that's technical knowledge, I don't know about it, I will not use this concept in the future. And since we learned that, since we know that people learn through narratives, through stories, and they don't do it in a scientific way, movies actually become important to learn about economics. Movies are weapons of mass narrative embedment when compared to other forms of art. Like, think about a very popular book, Gone with the Wind, who sold 30 million of copies sold around the world. It's a very powerful narrative that stuck to people's mind. But then you have the movies, which only in the US has been seen by 200 million of people. So the power of shooting is so much stronger, also because they're very vivid. And they create narratives which people use to build up their complex representation of life. And they take it from movies, they don't take it from our textbook. And Gone with the Wind, it's an example. But there is also some literature about how Wall Street impacted the way courts in the US pursued insider trading and corporate takeovers, which created a very bad environment. Soon after the movies, there was some juries found people guilty more often and with much harsher judgments. And another very nice study is about disaster movies. Disaster movies have, of course, very strong, vivid narratives about the world collapsing. And there's a study about The Day After Tomorrow, which controls for all of the other demographic factors and also for previous involvement in politics, and sees that people who watch the movies were statistically significantly more prone to be involved in environmental issues, to vote on that, to put their money on that, and to put that high on their priority list. But still, you are economists, you do it with models, you make complex statistic arguments, you don't really need to focus your time in saying, yeah, gains for trades are great. Most of the people who are involved in this profession really don't care about this basic stuff. Problem is, you are not the one who are going to decide about it. Normal people are going to decide about it, and they're not going to decide it reading amazing paper and understanding complex models. They're going to decide on a democratic process according to their complex representation of economics. Which is more distorted, the easier is the concept. So it's more distorted for basic economics. And this explains which is called the Murphy Law of Economics, which economists have the least influence on policy where they know the most and are most agreed. And they have the most influence on policies where they know the least and disagree most vehemently. Like, think about minimum wage, think about international trade. Those things, pretty much everybody calls himself an economist, agrees that those are not good things to pursue. But still, they're very strong on the political agenda. So since this happens because people have a completely different understanding of economics from what economists do, it becomes important to discuss about movies. And the problem about movies is guys like Michael Moore. They are very bad at filming the market. And there have been quite a few explanations about it. One is the one about complexities of the invisible hand. Think about a high pencil, the complex division of labor that requires to create just a simple pencil. You cannot make a movie out of that. There is not a hero, there is not a villain. And there's a quote from Baer who says, business does not produce heroes. Economics is a science of complexity, of interaction between people who don't know each other and still find a way to cooperate, and which yields unintended consequences. Not always a great plot for movies, but sometimes it is. So one of the explanations is a movie is too short, 2 hours, no heroes, not good at explaining economics. Another one is a more classic, is elaboration on a more classical one. We know that artists don't usually really like the market. You can say that they think that making money is a dirty business. And this is true for all artists, and there's a very nice model by Cowan and Tamara who says that every artist wants to make money, but they also want to express themselves, their vision of the world. And they face a trade-off between the two, because usually in order to make money, they have to compromise their vision of the world and please the customer, which they don't really much estimate about him. This problem is much stronger in the movies business. But why? Because of the kind of product. Why a painter can wake up one morning, buy oil, color, and a canvas and start painting? I hate capitalism. All the businessmen are corrupt. A filmmaker just can do that. It's very expensive to produce a movie. You need a complex industrial organization. You need a producer with your money. And even if you are the best director, you don't really, unless you're French or Italian, you don't even think that you're also the best screenplayer and the best director of sound effects and cinematography and so whatever. So you need to work with other people. You need to hire them. You need to pay them. And for in order to do that, you need somebody who does that, which is the capitalist people, the guy that usually artists don't like. The fact that they have to face much stronger constraint than the painter who just paint, I hate capitalism, means that they have a stronger sense of the very system which allows them to work. So they have stronger anti-market bias. Paper by Ripstein builds that like a principal agent problem. Because producers, they don't have an anti-market bias. They are businessmen. They don't even want to talk about economics and this stuff, but because they know that artists will be probably expressing ideas which can hurt the sensibility of consumers. Why is that? Well, consumers are people who are part of the market. They have savings, they invest them sometimes. They buy products in the market, so they probably don't really hate that much the whole system. But see, since it's a principal agent problem, the principal has not that much incentive to monitor the agent, which is the filmmaker, which they need to hire because they don't have the artistic abilities to build a movie. So they monitor it up to a certain point. They try to limit their anti-capitalist bias, but they, of course, cannot stop it. And finally, there's my third explanation, is that also movie makers make their own narratives from a complex representation of reality, which draws on their personal experience. And their personal experience is, of course, individual, but it's also shared by the feature of the market which they face. In order to understand the narratives, we're going to go further on the concept of economic failure, which is the topic of our presentation. And it's very important, especially during a recession time, because often, during a recession, business fails, and political actors have a bias towards trying to avoid it. And it's completely different if the general culture about it is skeptical or is optimistic about the power of intervention. So, and once again, economists have a completely different view from Lane and from the non-economists that are next door about the concept. As economists, we know that failure is normal. Failure is a normal part of economic life. There's an historical studies of the 100 largest industrial companies from 1912 to 1995, which shows that in that time span, only 52 survived. Of which only 28 become larger, 19 became the top 100. 48 disappeared as an independent entity, and 29 went bankrupt. And here we are talking about the biggest, the largest, the safest business around the world. We are not talking about startups, where the survival rate is much lower. This is more recent data from The Economist, where the average time spent in the Standard & Poor's 500 index decreased radically, and that 90% of new business fail shortly after being started. And venture capitalists know that if only 20% of their investment pays off, they're very lucky. So failure is a normal part. It's something without that much pathos and drama. It's how the market works. So. And why is it failure? Is it so cool? First of all, because it prevents bad entrepreneurs to keep in control of sparse resources. As economists, we know that we face trade-off. Goods are scarce, capital is scarce, and there are very alternative technical ways to combine it. So a bad choice, a very technological choice or combination of capital results in welfare loss and should be prevented to go on. Also, how do we know that an entrepreneur is a bad entrepreneur? That's another very cool thing about the market. It's a decentralized decision process. It's the consumer who decides on merits. It's not somebody saying this business is good, this business is bad. This car, it's awesome, but yeah, this car is bad. It's people from all everywhere. And this is a very exciting concept for us, but it's very hard to understand for other people. Also, third point, it's a dynamic perspective, and of course, the quote is from Schumpeter. The failure allows for innovation, and it's a byproduct of it. When there's a new technology, it's supposed to change the situation. It's supposed to drive out of the market business that are not up to the new technology, and this can change everything. As a sum up, we can say that preventing failure in the market is bad. It gives resources to somebody who is not able to understand it. It depends on the tastes of consumer. It usually, when you want to keep somebody alive, you know, the market decided they should go out of the market, you need extra transfer. So it's a very wasteful process. And I'm not saying anything new here. It's Econ 101, right? Not really. I actually survived the 8 most important Econ 101, the most famous friend. If you're wondering, I decided with this one. With Professor Verona, who is listening to me, which is very. And first of all, they don't use the concept failure. The technical mainstream economics concept for failure is exit from the market. And they usually explain it in the chapter about perfect competition or long-term investment decision. And almost none of them, actually, the Stiglitz is the only one who says why it's good for those business to exit the market. And he says when the market goes down, when the price goes down, there is the one rational response is for the firm with the highest production cost to be driven out of the market. All the others don't explain that. There's one example in Beaumont about effectiveness, and one in surprising Frank Bernanke explains why it's bad to prevent failure. But it's very cold dynamic, and normally it's a very cold rhetoric, no narratives, which is very important because when people approach the concept of failure, and the economist is not going to be the non-economist girl next door, but probably a producer from Hollywood or a filmmaker at Econ 101, but they go there with a very different narratives in their mind. They have seen maybe friends losing their jobs. They know it's a painful moment. And we are trying to unteach this idea in their mind and tell them that failure is actually good with just a few charts. So my best friend lost his job and is cannot face more than just at least kids to school on one hand. Exit is good because look at the charts. So it's a very unpassionate narrative, and also there is no description about in all of this principle of economics textbook about dynamic efficiency, innovation, and these concepts which are considered advanced, even though they are not that complicated. So going back, even if they went to Econ 101, they didn't really get the point of economic failure. And what else do movie maker experience? Movie industry, it's an industry with a very, very high rate of failure. Only 2% of all the movies produced have made up for 80% of all the income of the industry. They also live in an environment where the quality of their product is being judged by peers or spheres. Indeed, there are professional associations who say this movie is the best movie of the year. And usually, and quite often, this perspective diverges from the one that the market chose. So what will happen is that quite often, movie makers say, come on, my movie is amazing. I have great reviews and nobody's watching it. What's wrong with the market? It's not rewarding merit. So starting from these experiences and their general anti-business bias, they built narratives about failure. And a failure is depicted as bad luck quite often. But luck, of course, plays an important role in the market, but this is not the only explanation, of course. Another thing is failure as someone else's fault. They need to find the villain. They need to have somebody, otherwise the story doesn't go on. No? Another quite often is failure as injustice, like the state is not helping me doing this and that. The banks are not giving me the loans because they are mean. And another one is failure as betrayal, like an innovator, a businessman that shuts his business is kind of betraying all the shareholders which are surrounding him and the stockholders. So I wanted to test it and I built a database of movies from the 4 years before the big crisis, which is the crisis of the late 20s of this one. And I started with 240 movies. I coded the main concept, which are economic concept and the concept of business failure. And I tried to find out how, if there's a trend or if it's not. It's, of course, a qualitative analysis because numbers are too small to see any trend. But still, you can make some observation. The database is built from three sources. One is essay movies, which are movies who won the most important critics competition. So they reflect what artists want to express by themselves without bigger constraint. If you're producing a small independent production for the Sundance Festival, you probably don't have that much pressure on you from your producer to deliver something which is a public pleaser. On the other hand, you have box office movies, which are horrible movies that people go watching. for the third one, it's the Oscar dataset, which is a middle ground. Those are movies which are which received commercial success. People went there and watched those movies, but which are also part of a mainstream quality cinema. So they also received an award. And I actually found out that that's the most fertile environment for movies about economics and also for the depiction of business failure. Because in box office, probably the producer has the strongest control of the content. And besides avoiding the anti-business bias, he probably doesn't want the filmmaker to talk about economics at all. And there's no difference before and after recession. Even if like the world is collapsing around us, still people go watching Transformers. And in the essay movie also you have no sensitiveness about the change. Economics is still treated the same way, and they don't discuss it more or less, reflecting the fact that artists actually are not so much interested in economics, but the concept of a business failure with this passionate narrative around it, it gets more interesting, so there is one more movie about it. Once again, the most fertile is the middle ground, where there is some constraint, but not so much. And I also wanted to watch what happens before and after the financial crisis. Those are the movies who actually discuss the concept of business failure. So in the period before, you have a relatively amazing movie. It's the story of a rat with a talent for cuisine in France, and he becomes a cook. And it's a very successful one. But then, of course, customers discover that it's a rat, and the business is shut down, is closed. But even if it's a failure, it's depicted with not gloomy tones, also a Disney movie. And they just start another business the day after. It's a smaller bistro, which is an economically sound concept. And you fail big, and then you try with the proper dimension. Second movie, it's The Theater, one of the best movies about economics and politics ever. And it's the story of Howard Hughes, which was a path-breaking entrepreneur both in the aviation industry and in the movie industry. And at some point of the movie, he's risking complete bankruptcy for two reasons. One is that his competitor, Panama's, bribed an officer into passing a monopoly legislation, and which is, once again, it's a failure concept, but it's depicted in a very sound economic way. And also because it's time to build a new innovative plane, which is requiring a lot of resources, and as such, it's drying out these businesses. And this is, once again, a very positive concept of failure, because it's failure because of innovation. No? And notwithstanding this huge risk, it can still make it if it overcomes it, and it's not depressing. When you go after, the whole concept of failure is, of course, depicted with a much more vivid narrative. People around are experiencing that, probably also filmmakers are experiencing constraint, and they feel it in a gloomier way, but which still doesn't prevent them from understanding failure in a proper or improper way. So we have five movies, Warhorse, horrible movie, don't watch it, and very bad economics, so let's not talk about it because we are short on time. Tree of Life, it's an experimental movie by Malik. It's a movie about the fight between nature and love and culture, but there is one moment where the main character played by Brad Pitt, it's fired by his firm. And as a result, he goes back home and he starts thinking about his life and all his personal failure. And here, the director uses pretty much the whole failure as injustice narrative, because the business is shut down. No? But he says, oh, I never missed a single day of work in my life. I don't understand why this happened to me. Which is not an correct economic way of picturing the thing. It's not an injustice if a business is closing. It's a set thing, not an injustice. We have Up in the Air, which is a very nice movie. It's a dramatic movie about a corporate downsizer, somebody who is, quote, hired by pussies who don't have the balls to fire their own employees. And it's George Clooney that travels all around the world trying to firing people from all over. And it's a very dramatic depiction of the situation, which is also, the sense of dramaticity is increased because the director actually inserts interviews from real people who lost their job in the footage. But still, it's not bad in economics reasoning, because it shows division of labor. It shows pretty well that even if it's a horrible job firing people, you need some skills. You need to be good at that, and not everybody can do it. And probably the guy who has never met the person who's going to be fired is in a better position to do that. So very depressing, very anti-business, but still not bad economics. Bridesmaid, it's a huge commercial success. Didn't make it to the top box office because you guys went watching Transformers. But it's a like, very popular comedy. And it's actually the story of a girl in her early 40s who has failed everything in her life. It's the story about how she pays to be a good bridesmaid to her best friend. But it starts with her, with the story of her, actually never see it, but she mentioned it. The story that her bakery was shut down because she didn't make it. And then she lost a lot of money. But it's. And she just described it, oh, it's my fault, it's me, the genius who opened the bakery during the recession. So while it's a very commercial and a not complex movie, it actually depicts failure as a normal fact of life. And finally, one of my favorite movies of the year is The Artist, which I hope you've seen if you haven't, go and watch it. And it's also a movie about failure. It's the failure of a big movie star who cannot keep up with innovation and it does become obsolete. And it's also very depressing. He tries to kill himself, he lost everything. It's a very moving story about it. But still, it's probably the best depiction of the concept of failure. And that's why it's going to be one of my case study. Because looking at that, I say, okay, the entire business is a problem. Bias is a problem. Filmmakers don't like markets. But is that what is preventing them from explaining it correctly? Or is either its complexity or its not complexity? So I've chosen three case studies which describe economic failure in more detail. And I've tried to see if they are pro-business or not, and if they explain the concept correctly or incorrectly. So The Artist is the first one. It's very pro-business also because the producer is played by John Goodman, which is usually it's a very good actor and always associated with a good role. It's a positive character. It's very committed to make money as a producer. But it's also very cares a lot about personal relationship with the actors of the movie. And And he also gave one of the best quotes of the movie. Actually, I've a very little quote because it's a silent movie. When he says to the previous great artist, the public wants fresh meat, and the public is never wrong. It's kind of the big thing, the decentralized process of decision on merit. And it's also a very good movie because it's completely a Schumpeter movie. Like, even if you're the biggest monopolist, the biggest star, you can fail if you don't keep up with innovation. And George Valentin, which is of course a reference to Rodolfo Valentino, doesn't accept, refuse to use sound technology for movies, and he decided also to invest all of his capital in a great, apparently very good silent movie, which people don't want to see anymore because they want the new, the talkies, they want the movies with where people can speak. So he wasted all his money, and it's driven out of the market. And this shows radical innovation, but it also later on shows incremental innovation. And when in his love story with your female lead, she tries to help him, and they only convince the producer when they say, okay, we're going to give you a new genre, we're going to do a musical, which is using the radical innovation and improving on it by adding dancing and music and not just talking. And this is not even 101. This is not a very simple topic, but they still explain it in a wonderful way. So I went to another movie. It's called L'Industriale. It's a small Italian, no, it's not a small, medium-sized Italian production. L'Industriale means more or less The Entrepreneur. It's very pro-business. The main character, it's Ranieri, it's a businessman who produces green photovoltaic panels, but he's on the edge of bankruptcy. And it's very pro-business. There is a speech he gives to his workers when he says, I'm fighting this battle. I want to keep this business alive. Please fight with me. Even though nobody wants our environmental gadgets anymore. Which is kind of, it's exactly the wrong economic concept. And then it gets very dramatic about the fact that he goes to banks and banks refuse them a loan. No? And because the guy from the bank looks at these books and says, no, you don't have money, you will probably never recover from your actual loan. And he goes out and he starts complaining about banks doing anything else but helping people who want to work and who are real producers in society. Also, he has an offer both from his mother-in-law and from a German company to acquire more than 50% of the shares, and then they're going to give them so much money to produce an innovative technology. But he refuses to accept that because he wants to keep in control. And this is an entitled cover, quite common attitude in Hollywood. And the whole is built as a failure, as an injustice. But what is really happening here is market working at its best. If you're not good at managing a business, it should be shut down. The control should be given to someone else. If you have a very innovative technology and you're not able to bring it to the market, somebody else is going to buy it, and it's going to buy your firm or your IP portfolio, and it's going to bring it to the market. So it's not, and they present it like a social waste, the fact that those photovoltaic panels are never going to be produced. So pro-business, bad narratives. Concept, easy. This is failure econ 101. No? And finally, the third case study, it's Wall Street 2. It's Gordon Gekko, which we all loved in his previous great speech, come back. he came back from his years in prison, and he started describing, it's basically Scorsese at the region of the carpet recession. It's a very anti-business movie, as also the previous one kind of was. All the villains are bankers or involved in financial institutions. The only very good character is Gekko's daughter, who works in a non-profit and wants to keep it non-profit, and she hates money, and I don't know what I saw in you, Wall Street guy. So it's very clear, and it's like one of the first scenes, and it's very clear that money is a dirty business. Also, all the bad guys are pro-business. Going back to the depiction of economics, it's actually a gold mine because it talks about economics and failure all the time. And at the beginning, there's a financial crisis narrative, which is, of course, not a presentation on a paper. It doesn't do any charting anymore. But still, Scorsese elect Gekko to present his new book, which points out at the role that the bank said by lowering the interest rate in pushing leverage debt by banks, and also this affected the behavior of consumers in spending more. Which is, of course, once again, not a paper, not data, but a quite accurate explanation of a complex economic concept. Also, there's a following scene when they discuss, they don't really say call it there, but they make understand this the concept of systemic risk and bailouts. So it's done in a very claustrophobic scene. It's an emergency meeting of the Federal Reserve Board with all the villains, with all the big bankers, and they're asking for money. And he uses a narrative that resembles quite dramatically and in a very disaster movie way the concept of systemic risk and interconnectedness. He says if you one bank fail tomorrow, there will be no bank, no money in the ATM, and everybody's going to start fighting in the streets. Mobs is going to rise, and it's going to be the end of the world. But still, movies are not textual. Only textual products. Just by the same fact that it's presented by the bad guys makes the moviegoers quite skeptical about it. And this is enforced by the fact that it's a depiction of rent seeking. It's really a closed room where business is discussing and asking a lot of money to regulators. And it's this skepticism is enforced when the chairman of the Fed replies very strongly, but this is socialism, where I fought it my whole life. So once again, it's not an accurate depiction, it's not a sophisticated, it's not a perfect depiction, but it's a quite sophisticated representation of the pros and cons of the debate in the policy and in the economics about the issue. But when the movie goes back to a much simpler topic, which is business failure, it gets economics completely wrong. And at the beginning of the movie, the mentor of the main character, who is the son-in-law of Gordon Gekko, it's driven out of the market because of a rumor concerning the fact that his business has too much toxic debt. And the whole movie then says as if it was a conspiracy against him. And but the point is that the guy really had too much toxic debt. And in one of the previous scenes, he clearly declared, I don't really understand finance business anymore. I should retire. So it's a bad entrepreneur. It's somebody who doesn't know what he's doing. He collected too much bad assets, and he's supposed to be failing. It's a market functioning as it best when he fails. But Scorsese shows it as a conspiracy, as a part of a narrative of failure as someone's fault, or as an injustice, because when he goes to a meeting and he asks regulators to print money for a bailout, basically, and the bad guy, the villain, replies, "What about moral hazard?" Which we know, it's a basic topic, it's Econ 101, it's simple. But then it's explained improperly because later on Gekko gives a definition of moral hazard as having your money and not being responsible for it, which is not moral hazard. Moral hazard follows from this situation of not being responsible, accountable for the consequences of your action. But moral hazard is a riskier behavior. So economics wrong. And also the fact that he always uses that is presented through all the movie as an excuse to cover the conspiracy theory against the entrepreneur failed in the first place. So to sum it up, financial crisis, systemic risk, complicated topics, quite a good accurate narrative. Business failure and moral hazard, easy topics, not an accurate narrative, which goes back to my original concept of complex representation. For people who are not economists, it gets harder to understand simpler concepts, things on which all economists agree about. And that's a big problem, because it's exactly the topics on which political economy decisions are taken, most importantly, and they will affect the way the real outcomes of the market process. But what can we do about it? I mean, we are, most of us are just economists and scholars. We cannot change the industrial structure of the movie industry. We are trying to avoid the resentment. We cannot really change the anti-market attitude of them. What can we do instead? We can try to speak easy. We can try to make it more understandable to everybody. When we teach economics, just like Frank Nutt suggested, we need to make it, to sell it to the masses. We need to make it plain, understandable, what we define foolproof. And that's my conclusion. And we should care about how people understand our complex concept. And that's my content. I'm very sorry because my paper has not been uploaded. It's my fault. I sent it too late. But if you drop me an email, I can forward it to you.